of Era. It's a very very exciting parsha because it has so much about leaving Egypt, seven of the plagues, and one of the very, very famous points are the four terms of Geula, the four different promises of redemption. The parsha begins with somewhat of a defensive exchange, if we could even say such things. You know, Moshe had challenged God, "God, why did you send me?" So God lets Moshe have it. He says, "You know, I was never doubted by Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, but you doubted me. But you're going to see. You'll see that I'm going to redeem the Jewish people. I'm going to keep my word. And therefore, Lachain, Emor Livnei Yisrael, tell the Jewish people, Ani Hashem, I am God." The way Rashi explains that, you can rely on me. V'hotzesi Eschem, I'm going to take you out. Mitacha Sivlos Mitzrayim, that's phrase number one of redemption. I will take you out. V'hitzalti Eschem Avodasam, I will save you from their work. That's phrase number two of redemption. V'ga'alti Eschem Bezroa Netuya, I will redeem you with an outstretched hand. That's phrase number three. U'shvatim Gedolim. And then in the next verse, phrase number four, V'lokachti Eschem Lila'am, I will take you to be my people. V'ha'isi Lachem Le'lokim, I will be your God. When does that happen? That happens at the giving of the Torah, when we are clearly chosen as God's own, and God becomes ours. And you will know that it is I, God, your Lord, who's taking you out from the subjugations of Egypt. And then we have a fifth phrase, which isn't really a full-fledged phrase of redemption. It's sort of a quasi-phrase of redemption. And I will bring you to the land that I've promised to give to your forefathers. The Gemara in Maseches Pesachim, in Arvei Pesachim, has much discussions about, many discussions, about the four cups of wine. We drink four cups of wine during the Seder, and it's a very important obligation to drink four cups of wine, so important that the Gemara says, even a poor person who's so poor that he's getting from Tamchui. Tamchui was a communal charitable fund that was only open to people who didn't have two meals. Their net value was so low that they didn't have enough money for two meals, literally impoverished. So someone who's on the Tamchui's help, he's getting money from Tamchui, he should get four cups of wine for the Seder night. It's so important. Even though he's so poor, he also is obligated in four cups of wine. And the Gemara says he should even sell the shirt off his back to have the four cups of wine the Seder night. It's such an important obligation. And the Talmud Yerushalmi says, well, the source of it is our psukim. The verse talks of four terms of redemption, so that's how we know that there should be four cups of wine. I photocopied from the Haggadah. This Haggadah was recently published a couple of years ago already, 4 or 5 years ago, by Rav Yitzchak Lichtenstein, who is the grandson of Rav Soloveitchik. And it's a Haggadah of some of Rav Soloveitchik's ideas about Pesach. So this is piece number three, Oth Gimel, the Inyan Arba Kosot, in reference to the four cups of wine. The four cups of wine have two elements going on within them. On the one hand, there are all sorts of things we do Seder night as displays of nobility and freedom, that we're free people, like we recline. One could say that the four cups of wine are also a display of the fact that we're free. We're free, we're noble, we're royal. We drink wine. Wine makes the heart glad, to quote Kohelet. We drink wine. Or else one can look at the four cups of wine and not say that they are primarily yet another display of how we are free, but rather the four cups of wine fit into a different paradigm, and that's the paradigm of kiddush, or the paradigm of benching, when a person has a mezumen, say, of 10 people. So we have a practice that when we have a mezumen of 10, we try to use a cup of wine, that one person takes a cup of wine, and on the cup of wine he leaves the benching for everyone. Or when we make Kiddush, we take these words of Kiddush, of sanctifying Shabbos, and we recite it over a cup of wine. So the Haggadah, the word Haggadah, is a relation, a story So maybe these words, these stories, have to be recited over a cup of wine. And the essence isn't the drinking. The essence is the words that have to be arranged on a cup of wine. Both elements are true. You clearly have to drink, and you clearly have to say things. But what's the essence? What's the most important element? Is the more important element saying these things on a cup of wine, or is the more important element drinking a cup of wine that had things said on it? But the main thing is to drink wine, because drinking wine is a display of freedom and the fact that we've gone free, and that's what the Seder night is all about, that we're demonstrating our freedom. We're reclining like nobility. We're drinking wine like nobility. So this issue came up in a discussion between two great giants. So here, we can read it inside. This is the way, my Soloveitchik family puts it. You know, there are two sides to the Soloveitchik family. There's the Soloveitchiks who are here in America, who are in YU, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik and his son, Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik. And then there's another half of the family that never made it to America and has a tradition never to come to America because it's the Treif Medina. And they went during World War II, they escaped to Palestine, to Israel, and Rav Yitzchak Zev Soloveitchik, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik's younger brother, was perhaps one of the greatest Torah scholars in Israel, the Brisker Rav, and his son, Reberl Soloveitchik, also by the name of Yosef Dov, but he was known more by his second name, Beryl, was the leader of Yeshivas Brisk in Yerushalayim. So they present this story in a different way. But at least this is the way the YU Soloveitchik tradition presents it. And I'm a longtime member of YU. I've been there already for over 10 years. So I'm somewhat biased to this presentation, but I'll mention the other way that it's presented. The Shnot Hazam, in the years of rage, Shel Melchemet Ha'umot HaRishonav, the First World War. During the First World War, Rav Yitzchak Zev Soloveitchik, the younger brother of Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, was running because of all the upheaval, and he ended up in Chaslavich, the town where Rav Moshe Soloveitchik was the Rav of the town. Lo haya maspik yayim l'toshavei ha'ir Chaslavich, and there wasn't enough wine for the residents of the city Chaslavich, sheyishtu kol ha'mesudim dalet koso shel yayin. There wasn't enough wine for all the members participating in that Seder to have four cups of wine. So here's what the question became. The Rama writes, in Shulchan Aruch, Rav Moshe Isserles writes, that if one doesn't have wine for the four cups, one can use Chamar Medina. One can use the country's drink. Say the drink of the country is potato vodka. It's not chametz. That's what everybody drinks. They all drink potato vodka. Maybe diluted potato vodka. It'd be hard to drink a revius of potato vodka. Diluted potato vodka. And you don't have enough wine. So b'di'eved, the Rama says, maybe it's not even b'di'eved, maybe it's even as a first choice, but the Rama says you can use chamar medina, you can use the country's drink, for Dalet Kosos, for the four cups of wine. Maybe you had beer that comes out of something that's not barley. I don't know, a beer, a malt that comes out of honey. Right? That's the drink of the country. They all drink beer that comes out of honey. So the Rama says, if you don't have wine, so use for the four cups this honey wine. Use something which is Chamar Medina, the drink of the country. So here was the question. There wasn't enough wine for everybody. Achamar Medina haya maspik. There was enough of, I don't know if it was honey wine, I don't know what they drank in Russia, in Chaslavich, whatever it was, vodka, but it was Pesach. It must have been vodka that wasn't chametz. So maybe potato vodka or something. There was plenty of that. So here was the question. Vidanu bazeh, there was an argument, or there was a discussion about this, between Hagram Zatzal, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, Hagon Rav Moshe, Shehaya Rabba Shel Ha'ir, who was the rabbi of the city, Yachad Im Achiv Hagriz Zatzal, together with his brother Rav Yitzchak Zev, the Brisker Rav, Sheshaha Az Beveto, who was in his home at that time, Ma Ya'asu She'ar HaMusubim Shelo Hayalahem Yayin. What should everyone else do who doesn't have wine? Ha'im yoteir tov sheyotzien bal abayit yidei chovatam bikoso shehu kos yayin kamo shetzidu hatosfos sheyachol echad lahotzias chaveru bedalid kosos o sheyoteir tov shekol echad min amesubim yishte kos shel chamar medina kamavur barama dem ein lo yayin yika chamar medina ledalid kosot. The Tosfos has a question. Tosfos says, if we have an institution of four cups of wine, he says, I'm not sure. What happens if there's only one bottle of wine on the Seder table and there are 10 people around the table? Can one person recite the Haggadah over his four cups of wine and he will fulfill the obligation for everybody else, like Kiddush? Like in Kiddush, one person says Kiddush for everybody else around the table. So what about the Haggadah on the four cups of wine? Can one person have those four cups, no one else having four cups, and he'll recite it for everybody else, and they'll all fulfill their obligation through Shomea Ka'one? Tosu says he's not sure about it. Tosu raises such a possibility. So this became a practical question. What's better? The way it's presented here, it's presented one way. The way it's presented by the Soloveitchiks of Yerushalayim, it was an either-or issue. There was only a certain amount of money. Either they spent that money on getting wine, but it wouldn't be enough wine for everybody. You'd have one person, basically, with four cups of wine. And then you'd have to rely on the position of Tosvos, that one person, by saying the Haggadah over the four cups, will fulfill the obligation of everyone else through the mechanism of hearing as if they said. They'll hear it and it'll be as if they said. Is that better, or is it better to spend the money on Chamar Medina, on the drink, and then everybody can have Chamar Medina. And then you're relying on the Ramah. You're relying on the Ramah that you can use Chamar Medina for four cups of wine. So what's better, to rely on a Ramah, or to rely on a position in a Tosfos? That was the argument. Yeah, that's a whole question. That's a big discussion that comes up with grape juice. Obviously, and yeah, that's a whole discussion. Apparently, they couldn't dilute it. They couldn't do that. They wouldn't. There were too many people around the table. Wouldn't have gone around. So the question becomes: what can you do? What should they do? What should they do? So here's the suggested answer. Vine, behold, Katav HaRambam. The Rambam writes in Perek Zayin of Hilchos Chametz Umatzah. Turning to the next page. If one drinks raw wine, they used to add water to the wine right when they drank it. It was called nezigas hakos, the dilution of the wine. And according to the Rambam, Rav Soloveitchik argued that is part and parcel of koshel bracha. Part of the process of a cup of blessing is to add water to the cup. According to Kabbalah, there are very deep reasons to that. Wine itself is a display of midas hadin, of the attribute of God's harshness, of justice. Water is a manifestation of chesed, of God's kindness. By mixing the water into the wine, one is mamtik the dinim, one is mamtik the gvuros, one sweetens the harshness. That's why the Kabbalim say it's one of the reasons. If a person, Nebuch, doesn't have any children, so that's said, in Kabbalah works, that's said because the gvuros, the harshness, is too tough. It hasn't been sweetened. So one of the skulos that are given to women who don't have any children is that they should drop some drops of water into the wine for Kiddush. They should do this mezigas hakos. They should add water into the wine. And that's a symbolic hamtakas hadinim. There are other things that are also sweetening of dinim. For example, blowing shofar. The Zohar says that Rosh Hashanah is the time of dina kashya, a very hard din, a very harsh justice. But when we blow shofar and we remind God of the great sacrifice of Avraham and Yitzchak and how they were willing to go to the Akedah, to the binding of Isaac, that causes God to ascend, to alight off of the throne of justice and to sit upon the throne of mercy. That also is mamtik the dinim. That sweetens all the harshness. So another skula for a woman who doesn't have children is that she should buy the shofar for the shul. That the shul that's going to use the shofar, because the shofar causes hamtakas hadinim, she should be the one who donates the shofar to the shul. So it's a whole concept on based on Kabbalah. It's a big thing to add the water to the wine. But based on halacha, you don't have that. It's a more basic thing. Just drinking raw wine without any water is very hard. It's very, very alcoholic. It's very difficult to hold. You need to add water to make it somewhat more palatable. If you drink wine without water, it's really not too enjoyable. It's just too tough, too sharp, too alcoholic. So says the Rambam, what happens if a person didn't add water? He just takes raw, concentrated, really alcoholic wine, and he says the Haggadah over it, and he drinks it. He drinks these four cups. Says the Rambam, Yatza yidei arba'a kosos, aval yidei cheres lo yatza. The Rambam says you fulfill the obligation of four cups, but you don't fulfill the obligation of freedom. Unknown. What is this obligation of freedom? And then the Rambam has another halacha. Vim shasan bevas achas. What happens if you have four cups of wine that are diluted? It's good wine, it's enjoyable. But you don't first say Kiddush and then drink a cup. Say the Haggadah and drink a cup. Say Birkat HaMazon and drink the third cup. Say Hallel and drink the fourth cup. Rather, you read all of it. Read everything. And then you drink one after, one, two, three, four. Or you drink one, two, three, four, and then you read all the things. Shasan bevas achas. You drink them all at once without saying the requisite statements. Then the Rambam says, Yidei cheirus yatza. In this case, where it's good wine, you fulfill freedom. Yidei arba kosos lo yatza. You don't fulfill four cups. So what is this freedom? What is this? What's the difference between the obligation of freedom and the obligation of four cups? V'divrei haRambam tzrichim biur. The words of the Rambam need an explanation. Mahim shnei dvarim elu. What are these two things? Four cups, arba kosos v'cheirus, and freedom. V'amayim shesan bevas achas. Yatza yedei cheirus. Why, if you drink them all at once, do you fulfill the obligation of freedom? Lo yatza yedei arba kosos, but yet you haven't fulfilled the obligation of four cups. And why is it the opposite? Ulehepach, the opposite. Im shasan chai, if you drank them without the cups being diluted at all. Ubiaru agram zatzal v'agriz zatzal. So Rav Moshe Soloveitchik and the Brisker Rav, they both came to the same conclusion. Denira lomer bebir divrei haRambam, that apparently according to the Rambam, ika shnei kiyumim bi'arba kosos. There are really two concepts in the mitzvah of four cups of wine. One, shtia, the actual drinking of good, diluted, enjoyable wine. That's one. And two, the sidur dvarim alakos. There's a second concept, and that's the concept of reciting certain words on a cup of wine. Like reciting Kiddush is to be done on a cup of wine, and reciting Birkas HaMazon is to be done on a cup of wine. Reciting the Haggadah, and reciting the Hallel, and reciting Birkat HaMazon and Kiddush on Seder night should be done on cups of wine. Therefore, when the Rambam says if you drank it raw, without it being diluted, you haven't fulfilled the obligation of freedom. Hainu mitzvah shtia. That means the mitzvah of enjoying it, of displaying and demonstrating that we're free people, that we're nobility. Because if it's raw and it's not so tasty and it's not what the nobles would do, a king wouldn't drink wine that is undiluted. A king would always dilute the wine to make it more enjoyable. So one hasn't demonstrated freedom. One hasn't experienced that type of joy. Hainu mitzvah shtia, that's the mitzvah of drinking. The mitzvah l'shtosan derecheres, the mitzvah is to drink it as a free man. Laharo shehu atzma yotza mimitzrayim, to demonstrate that he himself left Egypt. Im shasan chai eno derecheres, if he drank it raw, that's not freedom, that's not the way of freedom, that's not the way of nobility, v'lo yatza, he didn't fulfill that concept. Aval, however, im shasan bevas achas, if he drank the four cups one after the other without saying Hallel and the Haggadah and Birkas HaMazon on them, yidei cheirus yatza, you fulfilled the obligation of freedom, kolomar shtia, of enjoying. You fulfilled the obligation of four cups as a demonstration of freedom. Aval yidei arba kosos lo yatza, but one hasn't fulfilled the obligation of four cups, what does that mean? Pirush dalit kosos. What does it mean, four cups, in the Rambam's terminology? Hainu, that is the din, the law of Sidur Dvarim Alakos, of arranging these paragraphs, saying these statements on the cup. Uvazel lo yatsa. And that he hasn't fulfilled. Darei lo Sidur Dvarim Alakos, he hasn't arranged words on a cup. Deshatat kol akosot bevat achat, because he drank them all at once. Achad acharei hasheni, one after the second. The Brisker Rav, in his book on the Rambam, he spells this out in much more than one paragraph. It takes him a couple of pages to say it, but it's the same concept. That really, according to the Rambam, there are two concepts in drinking the four cups, or there's two concepts to the four cups. There are the words that have to be said on the four cups, like Kiddush, like Birkas HaMazon. And there's a second concept. It's important to drink them as a demonstration of freedom. And you can tease these two concepts apart. You can separate them. It can be that you fulfilled freedom because you drank diluted wine and it was pasty. But you didn't fulfill the four cups concept because you didn't say these words on the cups. And it can be the opposite. It can be that one has fulfilled the four cups, but it's not freedom because it's not such enjoyable wine. It's raw wine. So now let's go back to our issue. Now, Nachzor l'nidon didan. Let's go back to our problem, the case during World War I. There's a choice. Either one person to have the four cups, or everyone will have four cups, but it won't be wine. It'll be four cups of Chamar Medina. So what's better? Dine, behold, b'din shel sidur dvar malakos, the concept of in the law of arranging the words on the cup, yachol echad lahotzi es chaveiro kmo b'chol koso shel bracha. If we focus on the fact that you have to arrange, you have to say these words over a cup, so say Kiddush. Does everyone say Kiddush Friday night around the table? No. So one person makes Kiddush for everybody else. One person is motzi everybody else. If we say that the mitzvah of the four cups is to say the Haggadah on a cup of wine, so then one person could say for everybody else, like in all cups of blessing. Avol mitzvah shtia. But if we look at the other aspect, the mitzvah of drinking, of enjoying, of displaying freedom, if I'm the only one at this table who's drinking wine, I'm displaying freedom. I can't display freedom for anybody else around my table. To display freedom is a sort of like, it's like a mitzvah on each individual's body. My body isn't your body. I can't do it for you. Each person has to do it. Avo mitzvah shtia, but the mitzvah of drinking, he mitzvah shebegufo. That's a mitzvah that's on each person. Ve'in echad yachol lahotzi as chaveiro. One person cannot do it for anybody else. Each person has to do it themselves. Yotzei lefi zeh, what emerges therefore. De'im ba'al habayis yotzi eshar ha'masubim b'kos yayin shalo. That if the owner of the house, the leader of the Seder, were to take his one cup of wine and say the four cups on it, and, you know, say Kiddush and drink his cup, and then say the Haggadah out loud and drink his cup, and say Birkas HaMazon out loud and drink his cup, say Halal out loud and drink his cup, and no one else is going to get. Yetzu HaMesubim Rak Yidei Mitzvah Sidur Dvar Malakos V'lo Yetzu Yidei Mitzvah Shtia. So everybody around will only fulfill the mitzvah of hearing the words, the aspect of the four cups being like Kiddush, but they won't get the aspect of actually drinking, of actually enjoying. They won't get that aspect of the four cups. However, seemingly, achim yishtu kol echad min ha-masubim chamar medina. But if everybody gets to drink chamar medina, so then, l'shitas ha-rama, according to the Rama, Sheyotzi yidei arba kosos b'chamar medina. According to the Rama, that one fulfills the obligation of four cups with chamar medina. So then, presumably, in a worst case scenario, so chamar medina can also count as mitzvah shtia, as a display of freedom. So then, yetzu gam ken yidei mitzvah shtia. Then presumably they're going to fulfill both points. They're going to say the words on cups, but also they're going to display freedom. So the more democratic way, you know, everybody getting something is probably better. Probably better to rely on the Ramah, that everybody get Chamar Medina and spend the money that way, than just having one person with the wine of, with wine. Because if one person has the wine and he's being motzi others, others are only getting half of what Dalet Kosot are. They're getting what the Rambam calls mitzvat arba'at kosot, the mitzvah of four cups. But they're not getting the element of displaying freedom. They're not fulfilling the obligation of displaying freedom. But if it's, if you rely on the Ramah, so then when then they're getting both. According to the Ramah, they're getting both fulfillments. They're getting both the fulfillment of derecheirus, of displaying freedom, and they're getting the fulfillment of the of saying the right things, of kos shel bracha, of the general concept of a cup of blessing. So that would be better. Here you have two b'dievads. What to rely on? Presumably it's better to rely on the Ramah, better to spend the money on buying Chamar Medina. That's what they first thought.
Where did that concept, the dual concept, begin? Where did it begin with the Rambam?
Apparently, yeah.
So what were they doing before the Rambam? Would it ever come up as anything?
Well, there's hints to it in the Gemara already, but the Rambam is the one who spells it out in this very sharp way.
So before him, there wouldn't be a question?
I don't know, maybe they knew the answer before him. Maybe they knew the answer earlier. But then they rejected this. Ella, rather, Denire, what appears, Demashakas of HaRamah, what the Ramah says, Dim Ein Lo Yayin D'Shosa Chamar Medina, if one doesn't have wine, one should drink the beverage of the country. Hainu Kidei Latzis Yidei Chovas Mitzvah Sidu Dvar Malakos, Aval Yidei Mitzvah Shtia Lo Yatza Kivan De'Ein Lo Yayin, Yidei Mitzvah Shtia Yotze Rakim Shota Yayin Mazug, Dehavi Derecheirus. The Chamar Medina Havi Kmosh Ta'an Chai, Ve'eno Derecheirus, Ve'eno Yotze Yidei Mitzvah Shtia. So what did the Rambam tell us? The Rambam told us that if you have wine, but wine that's not diluted, you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah, you haven't fulfilled what the Rambam calls Cheirus, freedom, which the Briskerav and Rav Moshe Soloveitchik defined as the mitzvah of shtia, the mitzvah of drinking, of demonstrating freedom. It's alcoholic, but even so, it's not demonstrating freedom. Apparently, because the only way you can demonstrate freedom is to act like nobility. And nobility have diluted wine, very, very smooth wine. Chamar Medina, whatever this national beverage is, whether it's potato vodka or honey wine, this isn't nobility. This is not diluted wine. So presumably when the Ramah says that you can use Chamar Medina, what does the Ramah mean? The Ramah means, in the worst case scenario, so at least you get something. You get the concept of having arranged all these words of blessings on a cup.
When we think that Chamar Medina is an enjoyable thing, and the reason you're diluting wine is to make it more enjoyable. Obviously, there's some essence of enjoyment is a part of being, you know, free,
right.
being noble.
Right. But maybe, I guess what they were, you know, that's what they thought initially, when they reject this, right? When they, because that's what they initially thought. But then they say, you know what, Chamar Medina probably is not derecheirus, because I guess they're assuming
like an ordinary drink.
It's a common drink, it's condescending.
Sort of, right. That derecheirus, freedom, means that now we're not the masses. We're royalty. We recline, we drink diluted wine, you know, many people like strong alcohol, but even though they probably like the stronger it is without the dilution, because they want to lose themselves and getting drunk, that's not what it's all about. It's all about displaying nobility, somewhat more refined. So they thought it wasn't the mitzvah of shtia. So then it turns out that they're both the same.
One thing they fulfilled the feeling of freedom in other ways, such as you mentioned reclining, pillows,
yeah.
There are other expressions.
Yes.
Why did you have
apparently, yeah, apparently in the four cups they're both elements. It's true. Yeah. Well, the Rambam, and it's really already in the Gemara it's mentioned, but the Rambam really spells it out this way so clearly. And for the Soloveitchik family, the Rambam is the beginning and the ending of everything. Everything comes back to the Rambam. So the Rambam, the Rambam. That's according to the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says that the four expressions of freedom are represented in the four cups. There are other explanations of the four cups. There's a Medrash that says in Parshas Vayeshev that we drink four cups because God is going to eventually give four kosos tar'ela, four cups of punishment to the nations of the world who have afflicted us. And then there's another Medrash that says we're going to have four kosos of Yeshua. We're going to have four cups of salvation at the great party at the end of days. So that's why we drink four cups. There are other explanations, but the Yerushalmi puts it together with the four terms of redemption of freedom. So then it turns out that the two options are basically the same. If you have one person with wine, so, and he's the only one with the four cups, so that means everybody around the table gets the mitzvah of sidur dvarim, but they don't get the mitzvah of shtia, of drinking. Whereas if everybody has chamar medina, then also they all get the mitzvah of sidur dvarim. They all get the aspect of having said these words on a cup, but they don't get the aspect of the nobility of drinking a noble drink. So basically, both options are the same. What's that? They're not. So Yotze Lefize, so according to this, the Benidon Didan, and after the parentheses, in our case, Ha'un Mutav Sheyotze Balabaisis HaMesubim Bekos Yayin Shalo, is it better that the owner of the house should drink his cup and say it for everybody? Oshema Mutav, or maybe it's better, Sheyishtu HaMesubim Chamar Medina. Everybody should drink Chamar Medina, the Shneim Shavim, they're both equal. If the Balabayas fulfills the obligation for all the people sitting around with his cup of wine, they're only going to fulfill the aspect of having said the right things on the cup. They're not going to fulfill the aspect of the mitzvah of drinking. They don't actually drink. Uvachamar medina nami, and in the the national drink, the national beverage, im shotzim chamar medina yotzim rak sidur dvar malakos. They're only fulfilling the obligation of having said things on the cup. Avol mitzvah shtia leka, but there is no mitzvah of drinking. Kivan de lo shasu yayin derech heres, because they're not drinking the wine in the manner of freedom. So therefore, eladu lahalacha lamasa. So lahalacha, kevan d'shneim shavim, since they're both equal, l'koshel kiddush l'chol apachas tzarech shebal abayis yotzias hamasibim, kevan d'midin kiddush tzarech yayin, d'ein mekadshin el ala yayin, kein helu agram zatzal v'agriz zatzal. Even if you can use chamar medina, that's probably not true in regards to kiddush. Kiddush should really be on wine. So since kiddush should be on wine, at least for the kiddush, you should have wine and have the balabayas bimotzi everybody with kiddush. The truth is, according if the way it's presented here, it wasn't an either or situation. But if it was an either or situation, also we would say better to have one person with the cup of wine and bimotzi everybody else, because that way at least one person gets both obligations. He himself gets both the mitzvah of shtia as well as the mitzvah of saying things on the cup. Whereas if everybody has chamar medina, then no one gets the mitzvah of shtia. Everybody just gets the concept of having said the words on the cup. So this was a famous discussion during World War I between Rav Moshe Soloveitchik and Rav Yitzchak Zev Soloveitchik. So they were talking about what should they do. Depends on the Rambam. How do you understand the mitzvah of four cups? Two aspects to four cups. And the conclusion is that really both alternatives are basically the same. Basically, having one person with wine or everyone with chamar medina is the same thing. Either way, you're just going to get one aspect of the two aspects of four cups of wine.
It's actually more well done how to understand the Ramah.
What's that?
The issue here is how to understand the Ramah.
Yes.
The leniency of the Ramah, that you can drink Hamar Medina, can be understood in both ways. Either the Hamar Medina will be a substitute, a poor substitute to wine, or Hamar Medina is never a substitute to wine, but it gives you some break in only the way.
Yes. There are those, right, as Dr. Belazon is saying, there are those who read the Ramah as saying, not even that it's a poor substitute, that it's fine. Ramah is saying, this works. This works on every level. So according to that approach, then definitely better to use the Hamar Medina, because according to the Ramah, it works fully, whereas the other positions are, you're just getting one aspect of the two aspects. This concept of four cups of wine because of the four terms of redemption is a very popular concept in Hasidic literature. Many, many explanations about it, many levels about it. So I thought it would be maybe instructive for us, inspiring, to see one approach. This is from the Shemi Shmuel, Rav Shmuel of Sachatshav, whose yard site was this past Sunday. Sunday, Chavdali Teves, was the yard site of the Shemi Shmuel. And there's a deep connection between Englewood and the book Shemi Shmuel. And that is the book Shemi Shmuel, which is one of the classic works of Hasidic thought, of recent Hasidic thought. He died in the 1920s, Rav Shmuel Bornstein, the Sachatshav Rebbe. He had a Hasid, I think his name was Pereshovsky or something, and that Hasid was a wealthy man, and he helped the Sachatshav Rebbe in his lifetime, and his grandchildren live here in Englewood, that's the Perry family. And to this day, they help the Sachatshav Chassidim, and they pay for the publication of Shemi Shmuel. So there's a deep, long-standing connection between the Shemi Shmuel and Englewood, of all places. So the Shemi Shmuel here, this is on page Samach Aleph, writes, Inyan Dalid Lashono Shel Geula. Why were there four terms of redemption? Why are there four cups? Why weren't there three terms of redemption? Why wasn't there one promise of redemption? Why four? So he suggests as follows in this drasha. Dine, behold, geulas Mitzrayim hirosh l'chala geulos. The redemption from Egypt was like the beginning of all ultimate redemptions. It encapsulates, well, just like the head encapsulates the entire person. If, heaven forbid, the head is detached from a person, the person stops to live. And everything in the person is controlled by the head. Through the nervous system, everything is controlled by the head. So, relatively, the experience of exile and redemption from Egypt was like a head to all other subsequent experiences of exile and redemption. So it encapsulated within it, in some form, traces of all the future exiles and redemptions. And we know that that is Geulat Dalid Malchiyot. We know that the Jewish people are destined to undergo four trials, four different empires. According to the Midrash, when Yaakov went to sleep in Bethel and he saw the angels going up on the ladder, he saw four angels which represented these four empires. That's the prophecy that the book of Daniel begins with, where the king Nebuchadnezzar forgot his dream and forgot the interpretation of the dream. And he told his wise men that if they wouldn't tell him what his dream was, he would kill all of them. So they said, how could we tell you what your dream was? If you tell us your dream, we can tell you what it means. But to tell you what you dreamt, he said, well, if you're wise, you would know what I dreamt. And then Daniel, he was a young boy in the court of Nebuchadnezzar. He prayed to God, and God gave him the information. He told Nebuchadnezzar what you dreamed was. You dreamed of a statue, and the head was made of gold, and the chest was made of silver, and the torso was made of copper, and the feet were made of bronze. And that represents the four. You also saw four animals, and that represents the four empires. You, Nebuchadnezzar, you're the head of gold, but that means you're just the head. After you will come the silver, after you will come Parasumada, will come Persia and Media. And then the copper already represents the Greeks. And finally, the bottom, the iron, the bronze, that represents the Edomites, the Romans. The four great empires that we suffered under were the Babylonians, the Persians, then the Greeks, and finally the Romans, or the Christian world, the Western world. So there are four exiles and four redemptions. So just as there were four redemptions from four empires, Ugulas hanefesh mikol ha'inyanim hameikim lanefesh umafiyim es ha'adam me'avodas Hashem. Tehineh yadua ki olam shana v'nefesh hem b'b'china achas. We all know, that's what the Shem Yishmuel says, it's well known, that there is a correspondence between what happens in history and what happens to each individual person and what happens in the world in different places. So just like within a person there is the head of the person, there's also a time in history that's the head of history. That's the beginning of history. From our perspective, that's when we left Egypt and we got the Torah. That's the head that set the stage for everything else. If we can look at history and say that part of history is the head of history. So just like there are exiles throughout history, within each individual there are moments of exile. And there are moments of redemption. And if there were four empires over the course of Jewish history, there are four exiles within the person. So what are those four exiles? Well, the Zohar HaKadosh, the Zohar says, the Kmoshi Yesh Gehenim Ba'olam, just like there is Gehenim in the world, Ken Yesh Gehenim B'nefesh, there's also a Gehenim, there's a hell within man. What is that Sheol? The Himara, it's the bile. Again, taking an old-time view of human physiology, the Adua da'arba marosein. It's well known that there are four biles: Levana, the white bile; Aduma, the red bile; Yeruka, the green, yellowish bile; Ushchora, and black bile. The black. What are they called? The four tempers. I think they were called by the Greeks. Well, they also had this concept that there are four biles, and these liquids within the person cause different emotional feelings, different emotional states. Four humors, right? The four humors. Valzeh dalid halashono shel geula. So why do we have four terms of redemption? Shemotziyim midalid mine gehenam. Each term takes us out of a different type of gehenam. And that's why you had in the world four empires. Each empire had a primary thrust to it, a primary thrust that corresponded to one of these emotional states of man. Bavel, the Babylonians, he kineged mara aduma. That corresponds to the red bile. Uva medrash b'chein b'psikta, the medrash says, aduma zeh Bavel. That the paraduma, the red cow, represented Bavel. Shenemar, as it says, Antu Resha Dedava, you are the head of gold. Daniel told Nebuchadnezzar, you are the head of gold. And in the setting sun, gold has a somewhat reddish tint. That's red. Parasumadai, Hein Kineged Mara Levana, they correspond to the white bile. The Siv Chadoi, it says that his chest, Udroohi, and the arms of this statue that Nebuchadnezzar dreamed about, the Kesef, are of silver. The Kesef Hu Lavan, silver is white. Malchus Yavan, the Greeks, Keneged Mara Yeruka, that's the yellowish green bile. Keyadua de Malchus Yavan, the Klipa, he Keneged Gavon Yarok Shebikdusha. In holiness, the green yellow color represents beauty. After all, that's what the Greeks were all about, secular, sort of external forms of beauty. And Malchus Edom, the Romans, the Christian world, the Western world, Keneged Mara Shchora, they correspond to the last bile, the black bile. So what is the black bile? Shehem Lakhu Hachius V'Hasimcha Me'Yisrael. What the Romans did was they took away Jewish excitement, Jewish joy, Jewish liveliness. Moshe Kasuv, as the verse says in Isaiah, Hazos lachem aliza. Are you happy anymore, Jerusalem? V'chein Yerushalayim nikres aliza. Jerusalem used to be called the rejoicing town. And we know that the Gemara says in Megillah that Rome is sort of the opposite of Jerusalem. Kishazeh comes and no fell. When Rome rises, Jerusalem fell. And Jerusalem will rise and then Rome will fall. Shehen lakhu asimcha meYisrael. They took away the joy from Jews. Now, v'yadua b'chachmas harefuah. It's well known in medicine. I have to ask if four doctors around this table of six people. So this is what the Shem Yishmuel says, that it's well known in medicine. Shemachlas mara shchora kashanikulam. The worst illness, the worst humor, the worst psychological condition is the black bile, it's depression. The worst condition is to be depressed, to have no joy. And what does it mean to have no joy? To have no life, to not do anything. Depression is displayed in a desire to sit and do nothing. You can't even open the eyes, can't get out of bed, can't do anything. To be totally paralyzed, to just not be alive. That's depression. The way to get out of depression is to accomplish things, to do things. That's represented by the black bile. Now, Canaan, therefore, Galus Edom Kasha Mishlashtan. Of all the empires, of all the difficulties, the worst for us has been the Edomite exile. Roshim Avoy Lefanenu B'Shem HaMedrash Rabbah. The way we've explained in the name of the Medrash Rabbah. And therefore, Ukmo Hamara Hashchora, he histalkos achios. Just like the black bile causes depression, which is to lose the sense of being alive, so too, now in this exile, the exile that began with Rome, the Galus Edom, Eini Tanu lo Navi velo Choza, we have no prophecy. Prophecy always came out of joy. We have no joy. We have no prophecy. Ein lanu shiur, and we have nothing left. Rak haTorah hazos, only this Torah. Shahatorah hino senas chayim lebaaleha. Torah gives life to those who possess it. But rak ba'ota ofen shu yoshev v'shona, only in the way that one learns it. V'kmosha ramzu zechonam levracha, like our sages taught. Kol yoshev v'shona, anyone who sits and learns, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shona Kenegdo. God learns opposite him. But really, Kenegdo Dafka. He models him. Im hu lo me b'chiyus v'regas ha-nefesh. If a person learns with excitement, with passion, with joy, with a sense of, this is life, kein hi no tenes lo chaye ha-nefesh. Then Torah gives him even more life and more joy. But if he learns it, I have to learn, I gotta, it's another thing I have to do. Or he learns it as, you know, I got to go through these motions. Even that is a burden. He just does it as habit. So it stays habit. It doesn't become alive. But if he approaches it with passion and with excitement, then it adds to his excitement. So therefore, the redemption in Egypt was a redemption out of all these different types of exile. And that's the idea of these four terms of redemption. Vahotseisi, he says, corresponds to redemption from Bavel. Because if we look carefully at the prophets, it describes Bavel, the very word Bavel means mixed in together. And Bavel is described as swallowing Israel. So we're taken out from having been swallowed by the Babylonians. Hitzalti, and I will save you, that's a hint to having been saved from the Persians. Because what happened? Ahasuerus wanted to kill us all. We were saved. Our lives were saved. The Ga'alti, we were redeemed. That refers to having been redeemed from the Greeks. Because the Greeks let us stay in the land of Israel. But they just didn't let us observe our religion. So we were redeemed from their burdens. And then you have a separate verse. V'lakachti, and I will take you. That's a separate verse, because the exile of Rome is in a different category entirely. V'lakachti eschem li la'am, that's redemption out of Rome. And what does Rashi say that is? That's getting the Torah. Because what is the spiritual nature of the exile of Rome? Depression. Lack of joy, lack of excitement and learning. And how the only way we can find joy is in Torah. The only way we can find joy in our religious experience is if we approach the study of Torah with passion and with joy. So v'lakachti, which is where God is going to give us the Torah, that's a hint to the redemption from the black bile, from the bile of depression, from the exile of Rome, which is an exile of lack of joy, of lack of excitement, of lack of simchas haTorah, of joy in Torah. So it's very appropriate that how do we display these four redemptions with cups of wine. And we know that Kohelet told us, v'yayin yisamach levav enosh, wine makes the heart glad. Because the deepest exile, according to his approach, is the exile of sadness, of depression, of not being alive, not being excited, going through the motions, or even worse, feeling that it's a burden, that one has to do it. And so we start with the worst exile. The worst exile, because that's the last one. We roll back that one. We start with rolling back the exile of depression. So we start with cups of wine which is a source of joy. We start with the joy of learning Torah, and the joy of Torah is going to allow us to overcome all of these exiles and to return us eventually back to the final promise of the Hevesi, and I'll bring you back to the land of Israel. So these are some of the concepts about the four cups of wine.